down to the canyon floor in the Mokelumne River. It was the return hike that proved most memorable. After a picnic lunch and fishing the river, we headed back up the steep trail. As we approached Mount Reba in late afternoon, what had been a sparkling blue sky with a few billowy cumulus clouds was now covered by dark thunderheads. At the summit, we were greeted by rain, while vicious streaks of lightning and sharp thunderclaps rocked the heavens to the east. We should have retreated down to tree level and waited for the storm to end. We didn't, mainly because I foolishly thought that as long as the lightning stayed to the east of us, 2 or 3 miles away at most, we'd be okay. As the storm grew in intensity, with jagged spears of lightning striking nearby treetops and ground, accompanied by ear-splitting thunder, my wife, who is rightly terrified of lightning, started running down the bare mountain slope, quickly joined by our 3 children. I, too, broke out into a run when a bolt struck to the west, placing us in the middle of the inferno. Fear drove us, our exhausted, wobbly legs gaining strength where none existed moments earlier. Up ahead, Diane shrieked and fell down. Kirk, running alongside her, thought she was struck by lightning. Fortunately, she only stumbled on loose rocks, but it was a hard fall. With scraped hands and knees, she got up and continued running. Panic-stricken, we raced down the open terrain, frantically trying to outrun the next lightning bolt. The rain turned torrential, drenching us as we half ran, half stumbled, desperate to reach tree line a mile down from the ridge. Once there, we pushed our way through dense woods until we arrived at the meadow where our small yellow Honda was parked. Bomb blasts of lightning continued to rock heaven and earth. Likening this to a World War I battlefield, I sprinted across the naked field and threw myself into the car. Never before or since have I experienced such raw, fearsome power. Never have I felt so vulnerable. What's so terrorizing is lightning's randomness, that at any moment a killing bolt can come from anywhere and strike you. We were extremely fortunate that day. My judgment and actions were irresponsible to the extreme. If anyone had been struck, perhaps killed, I would have had to live with the tragedy for the remainder of my life, if indeed I survived. Yet it wasn't until I started writing this book and dissecting the half-dome disaster that I fully internalized the reckless and uninformed leadership I carried out and which placed my family in that enormously high-risk situation. My daughter pointed this out to me when I was discussing with her the actions of the half-dome leaders. It was a sobering realization. Another reason why the 1985 Half Dome incident stayed etched in my mind was that I indirectly knew one of the participants, the son of a woman who worked in my office. He was one of 4 hikers out of 9 who blessedly did not reach the summit that day. I have told this story often, how with different circumstances he would have been there at the top when lightning struck and possibly killed. When I ended my career in education and looked to writing to keep me engaged, I quickly concluded that a broad audience might exist for the Half Dome story, which, at the time, received wide media attention. I placed a phone call to my coworker's son, and now, 7 years later, the book is published. I had great luck in tracking down almost all of the people who contributed one way or another to that 1985 episode. Out of over 40 participants, I failed to locate only one key person. That's Renee Miller, one of the main helpers that night. Perhaps she'll contact me if she sees this book. College alumni offices proved key in 2 critical cases. So too was the internet for a few others. Once I contacted a person, he or she usually was able to provide information on someone else. One connection was extremely fortuitous. There were only 2 rock climbers on the face of Half Dome at that time, and one just happened to be the son of my college classmate. He read about this project in the Amherst Alumni Journal and thought it sounded like the very time his son was there. Amazingly, it was. Yosemite National Park was exceptionally responsive to my requests, as indeed were all National Park personnel whom I contacted. Without park reports, I would not have been able to complete this project. The National Park Service heroically carries out its multifaceted responsibilities, albeit with insufficient resources. Our parks deserve more from our nation. Metaflight Air Ambulance Service personnel were also all fully cooperative and helpful. Nothing takes the place of on-site research. I hiked to Half Dome Summit 2 times since I began this project. I had been up there years earlier as well.